Hello and welcome to Real Talk, where curiosity chases truth every Tuesday at noon on KVSH 101.9 FM and on voiceofashon.org at your convenience. I'm your host, Susan McCabe. Today we're exploring one tiny and huge part of our climate. That's plankton. Plankton does, after all, explain everything. To help us understand the role of these microscopic critters who live in our waters, I've invited three experts to our studio. Ted Gornall is a renowned large animal veterinarian who specializes in whales. He's treated them both in the wild and in captivity, advising Exxon Oil Company, the Seattle Aquarium, SeaWorld, and more. Carlista Rickerson is a longtime scuba diver and part of a large group of feet-on-the-ground people who get to collect and examine local water samples. She's been doing that since 2008, identifying plankton, asking questions, and sending samples to the state health department to be checked for toxins. Rebecca Welty is a woodcarver who focuses her sculptures on the life cycle of plankton. Her artistic translations of their forms and science are aimed at opening eyes and inspiring others to love and protect the organisms that make life. Her recent installation at Vashon Center for the Arts drew exclamations of awe from many. Welcome to all of you, and thanks for joining me on Real Talk. We have a lot to learn about plankton today, so let's get started.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
So, as Rebecca says, these microscopic heroes provide over half of Earth's oxygen along with food for all marine life, yet until recently, they've remained invisible to most people. Tag, can you give us a brief description of plankton and their role in the life of our oceans, our waters, and the planet?
Wow.
Yeah, just roll just that off in 30 seconds.
Yeah. How long is this show going on? Plankton, correct me, ladies, comes from the Greek drifters. We are drifters as well at times. But these are animals and phytoplankton plants. That literally drift around this planet and connect the various parts of the world. There are various sizes. The largest fish, the largest bony fish, is a plankton.
What's that one?
It is a drifter. Well, the mola mola, the sunfish. And then we get down to the tiny guys. For one, the cyanobacteria. Specifically for me, Prochlorococcus, which is the oxygen producer, that wasn't discovered until 1980s.
You mean it wasn't discovered in its role or wasn't discovered at all?
It wasn't discovered at all. It might have been seen, but we didn't know exactly what it was doing. Penny Chisholm is the one that figured this out for us. And we've been abusing that poor creature poor cyanobacteria for all these generations, literally. We dump things in the ocean that reduce the population. We've lost, I think, since the 1950s, about 40% of our plankton.
Ooh.
These are the oxygen producers, and this is fascinating that people are all concerned about burning carbon fuels and creating problems there. But part of burning is oxygen. If you don't have oxygen, it doesn't burn. So you have to have a fuel, you have to have ignition, and you have to have oxygen. And it's interesting, when you strike a match or you light a candle, you're worried about the match and the candle, but you don't pay attention to the oxygen. Where does that come from?
The oxygen that we breathe, and we are saying plankton creates more than half. So that's
more
like every
half.
Other breath we take is thanks to plankton. Now, Carlista, you've been watching plankton in the Puget Sound and in the waters around here for a number of years. What have you seen change? What's different
now? I always check Docton, and for a while I was able to do Tramp Harbor until they closed the dock. But I can remember in 08 having Cheryl Greengrove and Rita Horner, which are two top names in this, stop at my house to help me learn how to identify what I was seeing. but there was so much under the microscope, I couldn't sort it out.
Huh.
I could list maybe 20 different species.
Of plankton.
Of plankton. I looked in a sample from Docton yesterday, taken at high tide, and granted it was only 6 feet of tow, three species.
We've gone from 20-some, is that what you said?
Yeah.
To three species.
Depending upon the time of year and where I can gather. I saw a rubrum in this sample. That's a tiny one that stops right on your microscope and then goes zip. And you can't find it again. But that yesterday's tow was the most of that species I've seen in all summer. But that's the only species that was worth counting. I don't know where it's gone. The thing I am, you talked about drifting. Looking at climate change, as our water gets warmer, they're going to drift north. So what's that going to bring in from the tropics or from Southern California?
Well, do any of us know what might come in from the tropics? That is plankton or is some other species?
I'm sure they're going to be on top of it watching for any changes. But just the magnitude thought of this teeny tiny creature moving with the elements and seeking a safer living place. What are we doing to it?
What are we doing to it?
There are other species in particular that comes to mind for me is the California sea lion, which we did not see in these waters until the 1940s. Their food supply is going north.
And that's plankton?
No, California sea lion is not plankton, but it's...
No, but their food supply is plankton.
The food supply is following the plankton because the fish that the California sea lion eats is following that.
Following the plankton.
It all is connected. As that plankton goes north, the individuals that eat the plankton, they go north. They go for the cooler waters.
Of course.
They're all looking for something to eat.
Rebecca, I know you're listening to this and you've been paying attention to this process, to this phenomenon for a long time. What and when did you get interested in plankton and start looking for ways to protect it?
I spent about 30 years living in Southeast Alaska and commercially fishing for salmon and halibut and then moved down to the Port Townsend area, at which point I discovered a book that was written in the 50s by a marine zoologist. And it was written in England at a marine science center there in Plymouth. And he was also, this zoologist was also a painter, a watercolorist. And his focus was plankton. And, you know, as many years as I had fished and lived right on the ocean and paid close attention, I thought, to marine life, I never really knew what plankton was. So I found this book because I've been an artist all my life. I really was attracted to the artwork that this individual created and the way that he very sensitively portrayed these spectacular forms and the science about plankton. It just opened my eyes all of a sudden, and that was about 7 years ago. So that's how I finally was aware of the full picture or a closer full spectrum of life that didn't just start with the herring that fed the salmon that fed us, but it went a lot deeper.
And you've obviously developed an incredible passion for plankton. It is from you that I learned the phrase, plankton explains everything. So could you explain that?
Could one of you explain? How is it plankton explains everything?
The way I've been looking at it, since we all wear these pins that started out coming from a plankton specialist at the Seattle Aquarium, the way I'm looking at plankton explains everything now is that plankton really represent the beginning of life billions of years ago when our planet finally became a hospitable place for bacteria and for plants and then for animals to nurture and come to life. That was the beginning of life. And then the way I'm thinking of it now is that it's also the end. It's the beginning and it's the end, because if we're looking at dire straits right now with the climate crisis, it's plankton that is keeping us alive.
That's both terrifying and impressive. Yeah. And it makes me wonder why nobody's really noticed this before. Why do the people who are supposedly in the know not understand the importance of plankton in the life cycle? And Tag, maybe you can explain a little more. Yeah, tell us.
I was going to say it's something that Carlista does every day practically. They never looked in a microscope. We see, I use the word totems perhaps, or obelisks to many ideas and creatures and things. You've never seen one for plankton.
Mm-mm.
Nobody could see them. We don't see them either here because we have a hard time looking below the waterline. When I was a young fellow on Lake Erie, I was constantly had my face in the water looking at the little guys. And I just happened to fall into whales over time, sometimes literally.
It sounds like Jonah.
But my passion has always been the plankton. And it's hard for people to latch onto something they don't see. You know, I'm wearing a pin now that Rebecca created. And we don't understand that the fact that your clams, your crab, many of the things that you eat from the sea, the fish, were all at plankton at some point.
Forgive my ignorance, but it seems to me I have learned along the way that there are essentially fields of plankton in the ocean. Is that correct?
They're clouds.
Clouds of plankton. And where are they, and how do they serve the potential for oxygen or for carbon dioxide sequestering? Carlista?
Just allow them to do what they're set up to do by keep cleaning up the water and not dumping our chemicals into it, and more visual arts, more chances for hands-on. The Strawberry Festival was a hit as far as I'm concerned, because we had 6 microscopes.
We did.
And we had fresh samples. And my son made sure that the younger kids that wanted to look at it could actually handle the microscope and see what was in that water. So the more we just get interested in Googling plankton and arsenic, plankton and oil, plankton and acidification. And there's lots and lots of research out there, but I'm always afraid that when we find out some easy way to manipulate something, the big companies, the oil companies, the coal comes in and say, oh, no, we're going to buy up your patent and just bury it. We need also look at how we dispose of medicines. How do hospitals get rid of their plastics?
So you're talking about general pollution of the ocean and its impact on plankton. Yes. And educating people about that there are
little critters in that water that are very important.
Tag.
There's something that caught my eye this morning. A environmental group, a huge environmental group, is sending out flyers for you to adopt creatures. And they're selling polyester images of these creatures. And are selling pullovers for people that are polyester. People don't get it. They don't. With this event that you talked about a while ago, it's called the GOE, the Great Oxygenation Event, where critters like Prochlorococcus, individuals like Prochlorococcus, started existing. This was 2.5 billion years ago. They were the first to start creating oxygen and participating with the environment. So when you see these images of what the Earth was like so many billions of years ago, you see things burning and volcanoes and such. There wasn't that much oxygen.
Oh.
There was a lot of heat. But you wouldn't see it. A tree didn't even exist at that point. But the Great Oxygenation Event started this stuff. And that individual is still around. Descendants of Prochlorococcus are still around, and we've been abusing them. Pretty much anything. We've always looked at the ocean, you know, the solution to pollution is dilution. We've run out of diluent. Diluent is the water. We've run out of decent diluent. So what's one of the biggest concerns we have now in humanity? Decent water.
Yes.
We are the majority of our bodies, water. Yet we abuse it. We dump things in it constantly. And Carlist is right. It is fascinating what we put into our septic tanks, what we put into our sewer systems.
Let's be more specific about that. What can people actually do? You're saying bad things are going into the water, and that's affecting the plankton. Say more about that. Tell me how I'm killing the plankton.
You know, one thing that I just did a bit of a research project on and did a installation in one of the Amazon buildings in South Lake Union last year was about microfibers.
Mm.
Because my eyes just got really open to microfibers fairly recently, speaking of polyester. And the problem with them and really, it's such a ubiquitous issue because we all, most of us, wear, to some degree, some synthetics.
Fleece, nylon.
Yeah. And whenever those are washed in our regular washing machines, fibers from those break off and get pushed into the sewer system but are so small that they are not adequately removed from sewage treatment. So they do get into the gut cavities, into the organisms in the plankton.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure Carlist has seen it a million times under the microscope. You look at a larval crab and its tiny microscopic body is full of little fibers. Red,
really?
Green, blue, you know, just the colors right from our fleece sweaters. So there are ways that you can deal with that, and it has been done in Japan for one, and I think in European countries where their washing machines are equipped now with filters that will trap those microfibers. Not in so far in our country, but there are retrofits that you can do on your own machine. And
so trap those microfibers before they get into the water system.
And they they're not food, and yet this is what the plankton assume they are. They will feed on these things, target them as if they're food, but of course
we're not too far in time to see the fact that there's going to be more plastic in the ocean than fish.
Right.
Yeah.
There's
and
been alarming reports to that end.
We eat about a credit card's worth of plankton or a credit card's worth of plastic on a monthly basis.
We humans. Through our fish, through our water.
Other food.
Yes. Yeah. You get your food wrapped in plastic.
Yeah.
I can't remember what the percentage is, but bottled water. What percentage of the companies that make bottled water have plankton or have plastic in that water? I keep saying the plankton, yeah. Plastic.
It's
almost becoming that way.
Yeah.
There's a huge preoccupation, and I can say this from a historical standpoint, with the public about the big megafauna. We're so preoccupied with whales and the big critters, and we neglect the small critters. And I'm concerned that we have environmental groups that are using the same lure to bring people to their causes, the megafauna,
mm-hmm.
the fuzzies, the harbor seals, the killer whale, the orca, are used as images to get people involved in the environment. And they're doing the same thing that the aquarium industry did in the days of capture. I was there. I was involved.
What are the days of capture? Tell us about that.
Oh, the days of capture in this area were back in the 60s with the capture of Namu and the large appeal of the big black and white dressed people. These became a huge attraction for the aquarium. So you go to aquariums now and you see statues to killer whales, statues to the orca. And when we see concerns about right now the southern resident pod, we're concerned about them. And it's the same thing.
Okay, we have a concern about them. We have a concern about the salmon and about the orca and the fact that the salmon aren't going to be there to feed the orca. Everybody's worried about that, and we certainly don't want that to change. But the solution that's being offered, according to what you're saying, is not enough.
Not enough plankton.
Right.
Carlistas.
Well, let's stop putting stuff in our waters. If you manufacture a plastic bottle, you figure out how to get that bottle back to your company and either reuse it, change the chemicals, do something. But if we don't stop pouring stuff into even our sewer systems or, just people going down, let's not pour any more chemicals in there.
It's the,
just know, because you can't see what you put in doesn't mean that it's gone.
It's the solution. Your solution to pollution is flushing the toilet. You're just trying to get it out of sight. A huge amount of that goes into your septic tank, goes into your septic field. It eventually gets to Puget Sound. If you put it on the ground, it goes to the sound. We've got fertilizers, pesticides. Pesticides. That's a pesticide is something that just keeps on killing.
Right.
And we have found planktonic specimens with plastic in them from the 1970s. Prior to that, Rachel Carson in Silent Spring in the 60s, she was pretty much beat up by mm-hmm. the rest of the scientific community. She was right. It didn't stop at DDT. For some reason, we thought DDT, we'll just ban DDT. It's the whole ball of wax. You've got to ban pesticides.
Pesticides and plastic, and if I'm understanding you correctly, when plankton consume plastic, they think it's food. It's not. They die. Is that true? Are they starving to death? Is that what's happening?
Birds do the same mm-hmm. thing.
They're trying to eat plastic.
Look at the fish that end up eating the plastic their guts full of plastic and they can't digest anything.
And they think they're full.
Mm-hmm. So they starve.
So it, you know, we find plastic bags in the Marianas Trench.
What's the Marianas
Trench?
That's
the deepest part of the ocean. That's the deepest point in the ocean. And we're finding plastic down there. Recently, how many tons of plastic were hauled out of the ocean?
Yeah.
Well, plastic is a petroleum product.
That's right.
Yes.
And hello. So if you were at Glasgow right now, I want to hear from each of you. What would you say to the world leaders who are there? What do you want them to do to save plankton, to save the fish in the ocean, to save the oxygen that we breathe? What do they need to know? What do you want them to do?
I'd start with pay attention to science. And when your cruise industry says, oh, yeah, we are the cleanest cruise line, find out for sure that they're not scrubbing their stacks that supposedly produce clean exhaust. But when they scrub the stacks are filthy, and that goes back into the ocean. So if you've got regulations, pay attention to them.
What about making new regulations?
Let's start with the ones we've got.
So you're saying there may be enough regulation out there to begin to
it's a start.
Clean up
if
the ocean?
If you've got it on the books, then let's do it. Let's start with that. And then as we learn different things, we're still learning so much. This latest thing on kelp.
Yeah.
What's the latest thing on kelp?
Oh, the kelp is disappearing and they don't know why. And that's a whole other big Seattle Times article. The Pacific Northwest magazine had some gorgeous pictures. The other thing is I've come across, I think it's out of my science newsletter, they give awards and grants to school children, junior high students, maybe eighth graders, for an innovative idea, and it's their research. They lay out what they want to do and then develop a program. And these kids are coming up with information on kelp, with information on acidification, and information on recycling the plastic. This is my chemical formula. This is what I think we should do. Let's pay attention to them.
So you're saying bring in the innovative ideas from kids?
Yeah.
Okay.
And encourage the next generation coming on to keep interested.
Okay. Rebecca, what would you say to the people at Glasgow? What do you want them to do?
Gosh, there are so many things. I rarely have the opportunity to talk to anyone in power, a policy maker, in terms of what I would request to be done on behalf of plankton. But I do, like Carlista was saying, I work with the schools often and with environmental organizations that are focusing on plankton and education and empowering kids, because I do feel like in any opportunity I've got to work with kids, it is to allow them the chance to make a difference and to have their voices heard, both by way of making art that represents plankton or represents the issues, the climate issues that we're dealing with. Yeah, I think that more power to young people and more awareness of the microscopic world. I mean, however that can happen. I mean, the microscopic world, certainly we've been opening our eyes more to it since the whole COVID debacle, but I think that the life under the microscope needs to be shared with more people. The public needs to.
So the more we know about it, the more the public knows about it. What's that? What difference is that going to make? Okay, I know about it. I know it's there. And I can do what I can do as an individual to try to keep plastics out of the water, to try to keep pesticides out of the water. Mm-hmm. Tag, what would you tell the leaders at Glasgow to do with this information?
Politics moves a lot slower than the glaciers are shrinking.
Mm-hmm.
Politics has got to get up off its butt and do something without having to go through this phenomenally slow legislative process. It needs to be a bipartisan thing. The problem is bipartisan. You've got to keep it simple for them. I would try to create something like the magic school bus, and the magic school bus would go to see plankton. We don't see the magic school bus anymore. Tell these individuals where it starts and keep it simple. Greta Thunberg is doing just a phenomenal job.
Mm-hmm.
She's the younger generation. You got to listen to them because they're going to be here.
Right, and they have to solve the problem. What about the people, the big people who are causing the problem? What about the oil industry? What about, I mean, they're creating not only oil and carbon emissions from fossil fuels, they're also creating the plastic that is starving the creatures in the ocean and potentially the rest of us. What about those people?
Well, they're creating wealth. I used to work in a company that made polyvinyl chloride when I was a college kid. I worked on the Exxon Valdez spill, trying to correct the problem that was created. These are huge companies. These are companies that have a greater amount of wealth than many, many countries. They are tough to deal with. They don't listen. And that's where the politicians have got to get the guts together to do something.
And there's that circular thing about there's the politicians that. Are yes. owned by those people. But we're calling them people. They, too, are people. They, too, are going to be burned. They are going to be flooded. They are going to be ravaged by the climate crisis. How do we reach them?
When I started this talk, I talked about where the word plankton came from, drifters. We were all plankton at some point. You went with the current that your parents carried you on. When you were a child, when you were a little person, you were just drifting around. We all start out as this. Bill was correct. It all starts with plankton.
And as Rebecca says, it ends with plankton. Mm-hmm. Let's hope we don't see it end. In the last 3 minutes that we have, which just blows me away, it always goes way too fast, I want each of you to make a final statement. What do you want people to take away from our conversation today? Carlista?
When somebody says, we've got to save the coho, what does that mean?
Mm-hmm.
Right now, ask somebody, okay, so we've got plenty of food for the coho in a certain part of the straits. Why are they still starving? What's going on in the water? Have we changed the chemicals in the water? Are we doing studies on plankton? Do they have arsenic in them, the bad arsenic? Fund those projects. And I was so pleased when I Googled several questions. There are reams of studies going on. Just thank somebody is looking at it and have hope.
Thank you. Rebecca, what do you want people to walk away with?
Paying attention to the small guys. I mean, in really in every level, both in society and in the water. Small issues can, small organisms can be really, really important. And just open our eyes.
Thank you. Tag, you get the last, almost the last word.
Almost the last word. Don't blame somebody else. Don't blame the industries. Don't blame the politicians. You've got to look at yourself first. Be very conscientious about where your environmental dollar goes. Keep in mind, it all starts with pennies. It starts with the small stuff.
Well, that's kind of where it's going to end, too. I want to thank you all so very much for joining me here on Real Talk. And thank you, dear listener, for joining us on Real Talk. Thank you, Tag Gornal, Rebecca Welty, and Carlista Rickerson. And thank you out there. Remember, everything you consume, everything you put in the ground goes into the sound. Everything you pee into the toilet goes into the sound. All that plastic that you wear or wash goes into the sound, and it's killing us. Thanks for listening.